The BS Report is a free-flowing conversation that occasionally touches on mature subjects.
First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Yeah. Welcome to the BS Report, a sunny Monday here in Southern California. Can you hear that sound? Yeah, that's the sound of the alarm. It's the Red Sox panic button. And not just that, but it's also the sound of the Yankee panic button. Both teams 0-3 for the first time since 1966. I was not born in 1966. It was a few years later when I was born. So I've never seen an 0-3 start by the Yankees and the Red Sox. Well, you know what we're going to do. We got to call my buddy Jacko, diehard Yankee fan at work. Let's see what he thinks.
Complex Litigation, this is John.
Oh, Johnny.
Oh, Billy.
Oh.
Oh.
What do we do?
Good God. When I said the Red Sox were a fourth place team, I didn't know they'd be battling the Yankees for fourth place. Good
Bad
Lord.
Times. I would rather be the Yankees than the Red Sox right now, because at least you have a closer and at least you have the semblance of a manager.
Well, yeah, I'd rather be the Yankees than the Red Sox too, just given the way they lost. I mean, Friday's game for the Yanks was a heartbreaker because, you know, a rare blown Mariano save. But, you know, Saturday they looked, the starting pitching was disastrous, but at least they fought back. And Sunday wasn't terrible from a pitching standpoint. You know, Hughes was okay, but they just couldn't get anything going offensively. But yeah, the Red Sox just, they've lost in the worst possible ways that they could have lost.
Yeah, we have a real bullpen issue.
Yeah.
Which is hard to believe, because when you let your closer, who won your 2007 World Series title, when you let him leave, and then the guy who was supposed to close in his place ends up becoming a starter, so then you trade for a closer who's been hurt every year for the last three. It's you could see how they would have been totally blindsided here through three games, because nobody saw this coming at all.
Well, they greatly overestimated the ace, Alfredo Aceves. And they
I still love Alfredo, but yeah, I mean, we might.
Well, I mean, they overrated what they thought they could get out of him, though.
True.
I mean, he's good in the role that the Yankees used him as, sort of spot starter, long reliever, not really a lot of pressure on him.
Yeah.
And he was great in that role for the Red Sox last year. But
yes.
And then his nose was out of joint because he wanted to be a starter. And they kind of yanked him back and forth on that and then put him back in the bullpen. And then they're like, hey, guess what? You're our closer. So
yeah.
I'm not sure he's ready to be the closer.
Are you saying they overrated it because his ERA is infinity right now?
Yeah, that'll do it.
Is that one of your top five reasons that may have overrated it?
And when they traded Jed Lowrie, who was supposed to be like the second coming of Rogers Hornsby, in Red Sox propaganda circles for the last 5 years, and then he gets injured a lot, so they dump him and they trade him for Mark Melancon. And you would think when he was coming back that they had the makings of Wetland Rivera circa 1996. And
yeah,
every Yankee fan knew that, you know, Melancon was okay. He was a Yankees prospect forever. He pitched okay for them, but I mean, he's no great shakes. And when you base it on his stats for the Houston Astros, who were, you know, 60 games under 500 or whatever they were, pitching with no pressure in the world, and then put him in a pressure-packed situation in Boston and think everything's going to be fine. I mean, that's just insanity.
I was preparing for my AL Keeper League that, you know, I spend way too much time doing. I have a good Red Sox source. And, like, about, I'd say 10 days before the season, I asked him, what's the deal with Melancon? Like, you know, is this somebody who could become the closer? Like, do they like him? And he's like, you know, stay away. Don't go near him. They already realized that he can't be the closer no matter what. This was like before Bailey got hurt.
Right.
Like, there's no chance. They never put him. They don't think he can handle Boston. Oh. Like, yeah, well, that's disappointing. Then, like, we have our draft, and, like, the next day Bailey gets hurt. And then, so I was not surprised when they didn't make Melanson the closer. The Aceves thing, though, was handled so badly from beginning to end because he wanted to start. He was one of the best pitchers in the team last year. There was no reason for him not to start. And nobody has ever been able to explain the Daniel Bard starter thing to me. It's never made sense at any point. I'm not saying he would have been a great closer, but Remy put it best yesterday. You have to have at least one guy come in the late innings who can get a strikeout. Or at
Absolutely.
Least the threat of a strikeout. You can't just, you know, hope that bats are going to hit balls and they're going to stay in play unless it's somebody who's got like that, you know, a nasty sinker or like even Keith Folk who had that great changeup.
Mm-hmm.
He at least could make bats swing and miss every once in a while. But man, it's just, it's grim. And then on top of it, you know, Bobby V. Yesterday in the eighth inning, I think it was third and first with two outs, and Phil Koch is pitching, your old friend.
For another former Yankee.
Gonzo's up. It's pretty clear he doesn't want to pitch to Gonzo because he tries to hit him with the first pitch and misses him. And the second pitch, he hits him. And just no remorse whatsoever. You can tell when somebody intentionally meant to hit somebody. And Gonzo, you know, God forbid he ever stood up for himself. Be against like all his beliefs.
It was God's will that he was hit, Bill. He can't argue against that.
God wanted him to be hit. So he runs to first base, and the Red Sox dugout, a couple guys are yelling. And they show Bobby V. He's just clapping. He's just in clap mode, just clapping. It's like, all right, guys, let's get him. It's like, are you kidding? He came out and he did the token yell at the umpire thing and then goes back in and just is clapping. So then Koch gets Ortiz out. Tell me if this quote should bother me, Johnny. This is Bobby V after yesterday's game.
Yeah,
keep in mind they've just been swept.
Uh-huh.
They have blown a 2-2 game in game one in the ninth inning. Yesterday they had a 10-7 lead in the ninth inning, which they blew. Then they rallied back, and then they lost the game with a 12-10 lead in the 12th inning. This is Bobby V's quote afterwards. The guys played a heck of a game. The guys played a hell of a game. It was a game to be proud of. If I remember correctly, we were down 4-0. We kept coming back. Great job. Great job. What is going on, Johnny?
I know. That's not going to sell in Boston.
Great job. What is he talking about? We just blew a double two-run lead twice.
I mean, if you go to the Boston.com today, like I think the comments after the game were like 1,500. So people like live and die with that game with the Red Sox.
Yeah.
Based on the September collapse, it needed a strong start this year. So to lose in that fashion, to blow not one but two saves of multiple runs, by the way. I mean, they had a multiple-run lead both times, I think. To blow the game is just gut-wrenching, and you need Bobby there. That's where Bobby's got to, like, flip some tables in the clubhouse. At least that's what the fans want. And for him to be like, heck of a job, guys, like Little League, like give everybody orange slices and say, keep your heads up. I mean, that's not going to sell at all. That's terrible response there. That's where you need him to throw some people under the bus or shake things up or do something and just be like, hey, keep clapping. That's not good at all.
Not a good vibe with this.
Oh, my God. If that was the Yankees and he was like, heck of a job, guys, I'd be barreling down to Toronto or wherever they were playing next to try to shake some sense into Bobby V.
Well, I don't know what they do because I'm not totally willing to give up on this Aceves thing, but at the same time, like, if Bard is going to be the closer, that move needs to be made relatively soon.
Yeah, they always talk about, well, it's different because they have to stretch a guy out to be a starter, but it would seem to be easier to be able to go back to a closer role once you've been stretched out to be a starter than vice versa. So I wouldn't think that it would be that huge of a transition, but then that opens up a spot in their rotation, and I guess, you know, there's some guys in the minors that could possibly fill that, but it, you know, it causes a lot of problems down the line.
Well, we have Prince Felix going today. He's not King Felix, he's Prince Felix.
He's Prince. He did look good in spring training.
I like him. He's on my fantasy team. I'll pay that much for $2. Going against Toronto, though, where, I don't know, we have a checkered Skydome history.
Yeah,
we've seen the high-scoring games. But the thing with the Bard, it almost – they're screwed either way. Because let's say he comes out and he's really good in his first couple starts. Then what do you do? You can't make him a closer at that point. Let's say he gets shelled in his first two starts. Then they're like, we're going to make you a closer. You'd be better there. Well, he just had his confidence racked by the fact that he got shelled in two starts.
And it's then like, the I told
either
you
way,
so
they're
chorus.
Screwed.
You know, the I told you so chorus comes in and says, I told you he should have been the starter. I mean, he should have been a closer. So, yeah, there's problems there. And your bigger issue is Josh Beckett, who's supposed to be your, like, you know, if not your number one ace, your 1A ace. He got shelled on Saturday.
Yeah.
And claims it's not his thumb, but everybody said that like the ball was super straight and super slow. There was, like, no velocity and no movement. He wouldn't throw breaking balls. It was a lot of questions there for Josh Beckett.
Yeah. They paid him a lot of money. They paid John Lackey a lot of money. They paid Crawford a lot of money. They paid a lot of money, ultimately, for Dice K.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And the man who made these decisions took a look at his creation in November and said, I'm out of here. I'm
Absolutely.
Going to the Cubs. I mean, it was really like somebody who built the house and the contractors totally screwed it up.
Yeah.
And made all these different things and made it basically an unlivable house. He's like, you know what? I'm going to sell this house. I'm going to move. I'm going to move to another neighborhood. I'll see you guys later.
He just abandoned the house, actually. He didn't even sell it.
He really did. He's like one of those parents that just leaves the kids behind. Thanks for the kid. Thanks for the family, Theo.
Right.
Thanks for the team.
Yeah. Thanks for the long-term liabilities that we have now at multiple positions. Thanks.
I think my favorite thing that happened over the winter was that they traded Scudero to have more money to sign Roy Oswalt, who then didn't want to come to Boston. And just the concept that a team that could show out contracts like this Red Sox team did would then have a budget.
I know.
It's kind of humorous.
That still doesn't make any sense, the Scudero thing. And I guess Avila's booted a ball or something at some point. You know, he's a defensive liability, right?
Yeah, and Yuklis is moving around like a 45-year-old in a beer softball game. So
yeah, he's put
that
a
is a tough him, right so. Side of the infield, Johnny. People make fun of the Tigers infield, but the Red Sox, no great shakes.
I'll tell you. And I watched some of the game on Saturday because it was on Fox nationally. And, you know, Adrian Gonzalez didn't look that great either, who's supposedly like a Gold Glove first baseman. There was a double play ball. I think they had the Tigers had the bases loaded and Salty threw it to first for a double play, and Gonzalez dropped it. And they had, it was another play where there was I think Beckett fielded it, and Gonzalez didn't cover first. A little shaky there.
God wanted him to drop that, though.
What's that?
God wanted him to drop that.
That's right. I made a joke on Twitter about it looks like Bobby V's more rigorous spring training really paid off. Because they look inept, and you know there was all this talk about, well, the problem was Terry Francona, and it was a country club, and you know, guys are playing golf, and there wasn't enough focus on fundamentals and what have you. And Valentine comes in and runs a, you know, stricter camp, and same result, maybe even worse, because it's the second year in a row and after September's collapse.
I thought Francona needed to go after last year, but I also think baseball managers and NBA coaches, NFL coach is really the only one where you can stay for a long period of time. I just, because there's so much turnover in those in the NFL that it's easy for a guy to stay longer. I think it's really tough for a manager or an NBA coach to stay for a long period of time. It's probably time for him to go.
Mm-hmm.
With that said, the way this played out has been pretty excruciating because I'm
already
tired of Bobby V.
Do you think maybe the quote from Bobby V earlier is because Francona left behind a stash of pills? Bobby V took a couple Valium and was relaxed.
Johnny.
I'm just kidding.
Johnny, was it an anonymous source plant that quote in your mouth?
It did, yes. I can't reveal who told me to say that.
You know, but the thing that really sucks is to have this manager who might be shaky, certainly appears to – I don't have a lot of confidence in him right now, especially after 0-3, but then to have Francona on ESPN all the time.
Yes.
It's like a double whammy. Yeah, it's like running into your ex-girlfriend in a bar like every night basically.
And the big shill. And the big shill who's not afraid to throw the Bobby V and the team under the bus.
Yeah, you know, somebody pointed this out, and I apologize because I can't remember who pointed this out, but I like Curt Schilling. He wore the bloody sock. We would not have won the World Series without him. I did not come here to condemn Curt Schilling, but he is on record as a player saying that people who aren't in the clubhouse shouldn't talk about what goes on in a clubhouse.
Yeah,
it is a bad look. It's a bad look for you, Kurt.
Yeah, totally.
Shouldn't comment on the inner workings of the clubhouse when you're not there anymore, when you're on record saying that you didn't like that. Not that I haven't said things that have contradicted things that I've said over the years, but that's a pretty bad look, though.
Yeah, definitely.
He was pretty vocal about, you guys aren't in here.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. You know what, Johnny?
He went off on somebody on EEI on the radio once about that, right? Because when the guy claimed he didn't shake Pedro's hand or hug Pedro, and he had like a 20-minute rant on the radio about it. Now he's doing the exact same thing.
Well, this is the this will officially be the 5-year grace period will be over.
That's right.
It's the last title. So I think the Red Sox fans are allowed to be on edge. Let's move to your team because I don't want to talk to about my team anymore. Your team also started 0-3 now.
Yeah, not good.
You know, I don't think the Tigers are a very good team. I think they might win their division by default. I think they have some holes. They have two big bats.
I was impressed by the little bit I saw against the Sox. You're down on the Tigers. I was high on them. I thought they were pretty good.
I'm not down on the Tigers. I'm saying, like, just in terms of being a complete team,
I think
they're a little top-heavy with those two, with the two hitters. I watched them. I was scared every time those two hitters came up, basically.
Yeah.
But and then they have Verlander. It's pretty good. I don't know. Maybe I'm underrating them because I was so down in the Red Sox. I don't know. I was more impressed by Tampa.
Tampa's good.
Tampa looks like a real team, man.
Everybody claims that their offense is weak, but they have Carlos Peña, who's an absolute Yankee killer. He came back. Yeah. He scares the hell out of me because he absolutely owns the Yankees, and it's ironic because he started out as a Yankees prospect that they dumped or traded or got rid of, and he just absolutely murders them every time they play, which is why it was nonsensical for Girardi's binder to tell him to walk whoever was in front of him to load the bases in game one. And Peña promptly hit a grand slam that you could see coming from miles away. He's a killer, and Joe Maddon's smart. It amazes me that the Yankees were, like, undone by this shift that he employed that they always use against Teixeira, but now they use it against Granderson, and the Yankees were, like, mystified, like he had reinvented the wheel.
Yeah.
And it worked to perfection repeatedly against Teixeira and against Granderson. So Joe Maddon, I mean, he knows what he's doing. I mean, that was supposedly revolutionary, but it worked.
The Joe Maddon thing is weird to me because it does seem like the biggest advantage you can have in baseball is a manager like that.
Yeah, he's innovative. He's, you know, he's willing to think outside the box in the cliched term. But, yeah, he does different things and shakes it up. And you know, you can't argue with it. It works.
Because you think, like, how much could Tampa Bay be paying him?
How much could they be paying him? I mean, they just gave him an extension, right?
But he couldn't be. He I bet he's not rolling in dough.
No.
Seems like I'm surprised that a big market team hasn't made like a legit run at him. Like you think like when Billy Beane, his stock was at the highest, that's when the Red Sox made the big run at him.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of rumors that Bobby V was just going to be a placeholder until Joe Maddon's contract was up because the Red Sox were really high on him. But then the Rays signed him to a 3-year extension, so he's going to be there for a little while longer.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have jumped at the chance to come to Boston. Deal with the media, deal with the most ravenous media in the country, and
go for the most laid-back place in the world.
The front office that has planted terrible stories about people who have left about 7 times.
Exactly, yeah. A poisonous, venomous atmosphere.
And they've also won 2 World Series, so there's no upside other than you have to win a championship or anything else. The Cubs job is the best job on the planet. Those fans are so beat. Yeah, those fans are so beaten down. They haven't won a World Series in a kajillion years. I mean, they're in just as bad of a place as the Red Sox fans were once upon a time. I mean, that's where I would go if I was a manager or general manager. You can't lose.
It's all
if you lose,
right. It's
people
all
expect you to lose anyway. Yeah,
if you stink, it's expected. And if you should happen to catch lightning in a bottle and win the World Series, they're going to build a statue of you outside of Wrigley.
The worst place to be would be Yankees, Phillies, Red Sox, like teams, the big, big attention East Coast teams, but have also won recently, so there wouldn't be the same level of appreciation if you did anything. I guess the Mets would be a pretty decent job at this point.
At this point, yeah. At one point it wasn't because they had a high payroll and there's a lot of expectations. It's hard to be the junior varsity to the Yankees, though, in New York.
True.
There's a lot of bitterness among Met fans, although they're 3-0 this year, so maybe not so much this year for now, but...
I know we're gonna have Cousin Sal's gonna come on after you to talk about this 3-0 Mets start.
Is he a Mets fan?
He's a diehard.
Oh, really? I was unaware of this.
It's been. I mean, how long do you think it has to be before you're officially tortured? Because the Mets won in '86. I don't know if you remember that World Series.
I vaguely remember. Yes.
And since then, it's been an S asterisk IT show.
The Mets, you're tortured if you're a Mets fan. No, there's no question about it. I mean, you went from the 86, and they, you know, they were nibbling around there in 85, and they were good in 87, and then fell apart to the Cardinals. They went through the worst team that money could buy years with Bobby Bonilla and Vince Coleman and all that mess.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had a miracle run to the World Series in 2000, and they lose to the Yankees, and that absolutely kills their fans. That's murderous. Yeah. You have ownership now, you know, tied in with the Madoff thing, and they have no money to spend. And they're basically, on paper, should be horrific. You signed, you know, they got Santana, and he got hurt. Jason Bay has been the biggest disappointment ever. I mean, there's been one disappointment after another. They hate their ownership. There's nothing worse than rooting for a team and you hate the owners, because there's nothing you can do about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically why I stopped following hockey.
Right.
Once you cross the line with the owners, it's almost like you know they're going to succeed when the team succeeds, and it makes you almost instinctively not want the team to succeed because you don't like them so much.
And as a fan, you're not going to, like, boycott. You're never, you know, fans are always like, I'm not going to go. I'm going to boycott it. Well, you're just cutting off your nose to spite your face then, because of course you're going to go, and of course you're going to watch it. Of course you're going to buy a Mets hat, so it'll be ridiculous.
The other thing that Mets, you know, to go 0-2 with Gooden and Strawberry was pretty impossible.
Yeah, definitely.
You would have taken anybody from that decade, those guys would have been in the top 3 or 4 can't-miss guys from that decade. And to go 0-2 on that, I don't even know what the modern-day parallel would be. I mean, it would almost be like having LeBron and Dwight Howard on the same team and then have both of their careers go in the crapper.
Exactly.
It's like impossible. So I think that's kind of hung over everything too. I mean, you could, ever since Doc got so wasted the day of the championship parade and missed it, it's been all downhill.
Yes.
For the Mets.
Watching the parade from some crack house with a bunch of guys you didn't even know.
As a Yankee fan, how do you regard the Mets?
How do I regard the Mets? Well, it's different for me because I don't live in New York. There's a lot more animosity, oddly enough, among Yankee fans who live in New York, because I think they take a lot of grief, like from coworkers and family members, where it's much more like a civil war. Yeah. Although from a Yankee perspective, I think it's kind of like a big brother, little brother, varsity JV, where you kind of pat the Mets on the head and be like, you're a nice bunch of guys, you know, you guys are cute in your little blue and orange uniforms, but you never take them seriously as any kind of a rival. Whereas Mets fans have like the little brother chip on their shoulder of, because everything's all about the Yankees. It's like the Jets to the Giants in New York.
It's actually very similar to Lakers-Clippers.
That too, yeah.
With the exception that if the Clips had won the 86 NBA title or something. Because the Mets at least won in 69, and they won in 86.
Right.
And they had the amazing Mets thing, and they had Seaver. And, you know, they've had some relevant moments. The Clippers haven't really had anything, but they have that same big brother, little brother. I mean, I went to a game Wednesday, Clippers hosting the Lakers. The Lakers won in, like, the last minute. And my dad and my daughter, my dad was here. He took my daughter, and I sat with the guy I shared seats with. And my daughter was, like, just dumbfounded by how many Laker fans were there. Like, she had never been to a game where there were just as many people rooting for the quote-unquote opposing team.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. It's a weird dynamic. And the Clippers fans have such a complex about it. I mean, they really hate the Laker fans.
Yeah.
If they could eliminate the Laker fans somehow, they would. If there were any sort of legal means to get rid of all of them, they would do it.
Hopefully your daughter does your daughter consult Clipper Daryl or vice versa?
I was really excited because I brainwashed her to hate the Lakers. I wrote a column this, and it's just gone outstandingly well. And what was great about Wednesday's game was she had two drunk Laker female fans sitting right behind them who were like yelling the whole game and just being kind of loud. And she, after the game, was just like, oh, those Laker fans, they're so terrible. And so it was great. It was, I could have hired people to sit behind her. It would have turned out better.
One of them wasn't Diane Cannon, was it?
No, it was not. No, but she, you know, because we go to all
these games. Is Diane Cannon still with us? I apologize if she's not. She's still alive, right?
Diane Cannon is still with us.
All right,
and
that's good.
Johnny, she looks fantastic for 162.
Does she?
Yeah, she looks great. It's funny that they at the Kings games, they do this thing. They do. It's called This or That. It's one of the most ingenious Jumbotron timeout things I've seen, where they just have one player, and it's just like he has to pick one thing or the other. So it's like beard or mustache, Khloe Kardashian or Kim Kardashian. He's just got to pick.
Yeah.
So when it gets to Lakers Clippers, it gets pretty heated.
Yeah.
And Drew Doughty, who's their best defenseman, picked the Lakers. And my daughter was just absolutely appalled. It was out on Doughty from that point on. So I was really proud. By the way, you're not going to be surprised. Not one king has picked Khloe Kardashian over Kim yet.
Shocking, really.
Yeah. Yeah, they might have to get rid of that one for next year. But hold on, we got sidetracked. Back to the Yanks.
Yeah.
So you're not. Are you worried after 0-3? Are you worried? Are you worried?
Well, there's been some troubling signs. Let's say the first game, Sabathia didn't look very good, but he always starts out slowly, so that doesn't bother me. I remember when he first signed with the Yankees and he got blown out in Baltimore like 5-0, and he turns it around. So he's a slow starter. And, you know, Mo's going to blow a game here or there. That doesn't really concern me, especially when he blows a game to an AL East team. They see him too much. You see him 19 times a year, and you kind of get, you know, you can time a cutter right or whatever, and that's going to happen. It's early in the year. I remember sometime in the 90s he blew a game at Yankee Stadium when he gave up a home run to Mark McGwire early in the year. It might have even been their opening day. So stuff like that happens.
Wait, in 05 he did against the Red Sox, remember?
I remember that too, yes.
Yeah. Yes. That was the first of many times that we thought it might be over for Rivera.
Right. And it turns out it wasn't, so hopefully it'll turn out that it's not over this time either. I was more troubled by Saturday's game because Hiroki Kuroda, you know, coming over from the National League is always disconcerting when he comes to the American League, and I had my doubts about that from the beginning, especially when a guy has a losing record in the National League, and I know his ERA was good, and I get tweets from Dodger fans saying, oh, he's going to be fine, he's reliable. But he was way too reminiscent of Dice K for me, even down to wearing the same number, I think, because I think Dice K is number 18. And he's like a nibbler. Every count was 3-2, and he's like nibbling.
Nothing
worse. Throw the ball down the plate.
Nothing worse than a nibbler.
Oh, it drove me nuts.
All-time most frustrating thing to watch as a baseball fan. I hate it.
You know, he's racking up a huge pitch count. He's afraid to throw it down the pike. It's like, that drives me nuts. That drove me crazy. And then, you know, you look up and they're down 5-0 before you even can blink, and then that's a hopeless game. Sunday's game, you know, Phil Hughes threw about 400 pitches in 5 innings, but at least he held them to 3 runs. But they have the same problems that the thing that's really disconcerting, though, is they have the same problem that they've had for about the last 10 years of an inability to get a clutch hit. You know, Teixeira is still Teixeira. He's freaking 1-for-9 in April. Every year it's going to be, oh, this is the year I'm going to start out hot. He's 1-for-9. He couldn't get a clutch hit if it fell on him. And they have the same problems. You know, a guy sent me a tweet of, like, they look like businessmen in pinstripe suits. They have seemingly no life. They can't get a big hit. They don't extend rallies. They don't tack on runs when they have a lead. You know, to start out behind the eight ball when you're behind every game, that's tough to come back from. I get it. But, I mean, they made a little bit of a run Saturday night after I went to bed to make it 8-6. But I don't know. It's the same thing every year. One year I just wish that I could see the offense like they used to have, where they tacked on runs, they got 2 out hits, they could sustain rallies. But every year they let me down.
I didn't like Kuroda for them as a signing, and I stayed away from him in our keeper league because it makes me nervous when somebody begrudgingly signs with a team.
Right. They had, and it really just seemed like, his head.
Yeah, and it really seemed like he just never wanted to sign there, and then he was like, well, how much?
Yeah.
I guess I have to. Like, that's not good.
At the trading deadline last year, he was on their radar, and then there was all those reports, well, he wants to be on the West Coast or he might go back to Japan.
Yeah.
So that's not a guy that you want playing in New York. And then they made him the number 2 starter, which is even more incredulous to me.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, as a 4th or 5th guy, maybe you take $10 million is chump change to the Yankees, so they take a flyer on him. You know, it adds more to their rotation. But he's the number 2 guy, and he's nibbling, and he's given up 8 runs. Maybe he didn't give up all 8, but he gave up 6 at least. That was really like an inauspicious beginning for me, for him as a Yankee. I'm already selling his stock.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I do wonder, this is admittedly an off-the-cuff comment after 3 games, but just from preparing for my league for 3 weeks and also just watching the games these first few 4 days, I guess, after we had the 4-day opening day, which is one of the dumbest things in the history of mankind. It does feel like the American League is better this year as a whole.
Even
watching a team like the White Sox. Like, the White Sox have, you know, nobody was counting on them, but, you know, they have a young team and they have a really good bullpen, And they have a couple guys, you know, Dunn and Konerko might hit 80 homers combined. Like, they're not terrible. Mm-hmm. And that's a team that people didn't think was going to win 80 games. Then you look at, like, Toronto and Baltimore. Like, Baltimore looks better this year. And that's a team everybody was writing off.
Yeah,
Toronto looks
right.
Like, I don't want to – I'm not crazy about going to Toronto 0-3 today. They might score 10 runs tonight. I was even watching some of the Angels-Royals games. I think the Royals are better this year. The Angels and the Rangers are obviously good. Seattle actually looks like they have a little bit of rejuvenation. Cespedes on Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out he might be legit. I mean, he had some bombs. So I don't – just in general, I wonder if this is – a more competitive league as a whole than it's been than we've seen the last few years.
So the days of penciling in the Yankees and the Red Sox automatically in the postseason, those days might be over. Everybody else might have caught up, or they've regressed or something. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good teams. I thought Detroit looked really good. Tampa Bay looks phenomenal. So yeah, it ain't easy. It's not getting any easier. And, you know, there's still the Rangers and everybody else out there lurking. There's no question.
Detroit definitely has an identity. I guess I was too hard on them before, because you know they're going to hit the ball. You know they have Verlander. You know, and mm-hmm. if Fister does what he did last year, then they have two starters. I've never been a Scherzer guy. But, yeah, I mean, you go down the line, and a lot of these teams have what's
they have Jim Leland, who I love managing them.
I got to say, the Angels are pretty interesting with Pujols, even though it's not like he lit it up last weekend. But, you know, it's just – from a standpoint of there's not a lot of games on the West Coast, but I'm on West Coast hours just flipping channels.
Yeah,
you're stumbling by that Angels game and he's on deck. I'm watching Pujols hit. I'm sorry.
Right.
You know, so it's pretty interesting. Anyway.
Well, what I'm troubled by, you know, the Yankees and the Red Sox are both 0-3 for the first time since 1966.
Yes.
And that, ironically, is the same year that this season of Mad Men is set in. So I think it's maybe John Hamm's fault or something.
I didn't make that connection.
Yeah, 1966 on Mad Men and in the AL East. Of course, there was AL East in 1966, but it's just like the American League.
If Matthew Weiner was a sports fan, he would have figured out a way to dub that in.
Yeah, absolutely. So like maybe they can write that in for next week's episode.
Yeah, well, I say this and, you know, not even panicking, not overreact anything. I think the league is good enough this year that we really could see one of these teams go in the full-fledged tank.
Yeah, and yeah.
My team is a better bet than your bet, but I would not be shocked at all by a 79-83 Red Sox season. I would not.
No, I wouldn't either. And, you know, one of these years the Yankees are just going to collapse. You know, they're just not going to be able to put it together. You would think with a $200 million payroll that they could sustain things, but, you know, one of these years it's going to fall apart. So, you know, maybe it'll be this year.
Last question. How many, let's say Rivera blows a second save.
Yeah.
Let's say he blows one tonight. How many blown saves in a row would he have to have before you completely panicked?
20.
20? Interesting.
Yeah. He's got too much credibility. He's Mario. He's the greatest closer of all time.
Okay.
No, I say that half tongue in cheek. But if he blows like five saves and doesn't have a save, I mean, it's going to be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. There's going to be some questions like, is this the end? Is the cutter not cutting anymore? Is he just lost too much velocity? Yeah, there would be. I'd say five. Legitimately, there'd be some questions.
All right. Well, just remember, he's 4 days younger than I am.
Yes, I am aware.
All right, Johnny. We will talk to you soon.
All right,
thanks,
buddy.
Thanks for the time. All right.
See you soon.
All right. Now we are going to call somebody who actually likes his baseball team, our friend Cousin Sal, who we haven't heard from for a few weeks.
Hello.
Hey, buddy.
What's happening, man?
I don't know. The Mets are 3-0. The Red Sox and Yankees are 0-6.
I love it. I love it. This is what we waited for, right?
Jacko just pointed out he preceded you on the podcast. He just pointed out that Mad Men was set in 1966 this season, the last time the Yankees and Red Sox were 0-3.
Wow.
That's pretty weird.
Wow, that's a good call.
I don't know what the Mets were that year, though. Was that? Wow. Did you have Seaver by then or no? You didn't have Seaver by then.
We didn't have Seaver until, I think, late 67 or something.
How are you feeling? What's it like when you have zero expectations for a baseball team? And
are we rolling now?
Yeah, we're rolling.
Oh, we are. I'm sorry.
We're talking.
Oh, no, I didn't know. Fine. This never works. Yeah. You just call me.
I know. We tried something different.
I remember, back in 1966, Don Draper had a bad dream and choked out the Mets owner, Joan Payson. She wasn't actually the owner yet, but it was a few years away.
That's next week's episode. What's it like, though, we were talking about you wanted to short the Mets over-under potentially before deciding that they wouldn't be fun to root against your own team.
I know. I was looking, and, you know, we had our budding first baseman battling yellow fever, which I hadn't even really heard of. Our knuckleballer who stymies everyone, R.A. Dickey, writes a book about how he was molested by his nanny. Our owners have to cough up, like, hundreds of millions of dollars for some Herbalife scam or something. So it wasn't looking good. It really wasn't. So, I wanted to go under. But I've never seen a team like this. I've never rooted for the plucky, the come-from-behind nobodies. We've either, like, in the 70s, it was like Craig Swan and Joel Youngblood and Eddie Cranepool, the teams that were supposed to suck and did. Or in the mid-80s, the team that nobody liked except Mets fans, and they were supposed to win, and they did, or the more recent teams are supposed to win, and they don't. But I never had something like this before. It's pretty cool.
The only thing I could think of, I was living in Connecticut in, I think, Strawberry's first full year, which was 84.
Yeah.
When they were considered like about 2 years away, but then they got a little bit frisky. I vaguely remember that being a really fun.
Right, like, that was fun. And then the Cardinals beat us up towards the end. But, yeah, that was a little funner.
Even that team had real guys on it, though. I mean, this team.
Yeah, no, I know. We have
a motley crew.
Yeah. But, you know, is there anything more overrated than the first weekend of baseball? It's like, I know football. If you win the first three games in football, and I know it's over 3 weeks, you could use that momentum to take it to the end of the season, like the Bengals and Lions. Like, those weren't great teams, but, they rode out their nice momentum, and they were in the playoffs. But this is a long, long year. I wouldn't worry. You're not too worried, are you?
I'm so worried. We have no closer. Who's our closer? We don't have one.
I know. Who's
we don't have an ace. We don't have an ace or a closer.
Not important.
It's tough. Tough times.
Not important.
You know, I will say, though, I agree with you that the first weekend can be overrated. But every year there's one team that starts out and they have – and baseball is the sport where this happens the most. The team that's like, where do these guys come from? And it just kind of takes a life of their own. And in football, it'll happen, but eventually the league will catch up with it. You'll see the team start out 4-1 and, who was the team last year that did that in football?
I was thinking the Bengals or the Lions.
In baseball, it actually can kind of keep going. And usually it's like an NL Central team or something where they'll end up at 89 wins and be right in the cusp of making the playoffs. But maybe it'll be the Mets this year.
Yeah, talk to me after 3 weeks is the only thing I'll say. But the other thing is I'm watching, and this I really just don't think I'm ever going to see a no-hitter out of this team. And Jonathan Neese had the shot. He went through six innings. And for a Mets fan, it's like, he gets the first batter retired, and you're thinking no hitter because it's just never happened in 50 years of the franchise. We've had 31, I think, one hitters and zero no hitters. And here's a guy who had a nose job, and I'm thinking of like the post cover the next day or whatever, the back cover, like no nose or no, what? I don't know what they're going to do, but through six, it's exciting. And I just don't think, and I'm watching with my dad, and I'm like, he's like, don't talk about it. I'm like, forget about the jinxing. We've done this for 40 years. I've been rooting for this team, and it hasn't worked. I'm not for the jinx anymore. I'll bring it up every batter for now on, but I don't know. I'd like to see one. I mean, not as great as a pennant or a World Series win, but really, I'd love to see a no-hitter, for God's sakes already.
It's crazy how that's, my buddy Gus, who I've known for 30 years, diehard Mets fan, was with his dad yesterday. His dad was visiting. And after the fifth inning, he just emailed me the shh text.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no. And it's like they've been roped into so many near Mets no-hitters. Like, this is like – how many – what has it been, 52 years?
1962. So, yeah, 50 – this is the 50th
50 years?
Year.
I mean, it's like the law of averages. I remember with the Red Sox, I'd never watched a no-hitter, and it was – for me, like right up there with winning the World Series. Like I just always wanted to watch a Red Sox game when they had a no-hitter. And then just randomly when it finally happened, it was Hideo Nomo. It was like his first start. It was an ugly no-hitter. Like there were walks. Like it wasn't like how I wanted it to be.
Yeah.
And then it was just weird.
For the first time.
Then Derek Lowe had one in Fenway Park, and that felt kind of like the first official Red Sox no-hitter.
That would be the way to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking, but here's a team. Nolan Ryan's had seven, never with the Mets where he started off. David Cohn. That's the knife in the back right there that he goes on pitch one for the Yankees.
You know? Doc had one too.
Doc Gooden too. Same thing. 31 one hitters.
It's amazing. I went to the first interleague game with the Red Sox, or the first interleague series with the Red Sox and the Mets. Gus and his dad and I, we went to the Shea. It was the same day that Gus's dad came up with the idea for the Hall of Fame pyramid. And we get to the game, and who was the guy? Mark Clark, who was your starter in like 1998, 1997? Clark, I
want to
say.
I don't think it was Mark Clark. Who was it?
Something like that. But that guy had a no-hitter against the Red Sox and hit a homer and took a no-hitter in the seventh. And you could just feel it in the stands. People were freaking out.
Oh, yeah.
Got a hit off him. But, yeah.
Wait a minute. I got to look this up now. 1998?
Yeah. I'm going to say 19. It could have been 1997, but I'm going to say 1998. Gus will remember. It was the first. It was a Saturday, and it was the first whatever. What was the closest you've come? I'm going to look this up while you talk. What was the closest that you remember coming?
Oh, like with one out. Well, Jimmy Quell, 1969, a little before my time. Jimmy Quell had a single with one out against Seaver in the ninth. I was at a Mets-Dodgers game. Pedro Martinez, who later went to pitch a one-hitter for the Mets, took one into the ninth and ended up losing the game. I was like, oh, this would be great. It was the first game I took my son to ever, but they not only lost a no-hitter but lost the game. Oh. I'm trying to see the one you looked at there.
Yeah. Was your dad a Mets fan?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a Brooklyn Dodgers fan, so when they left, he was brokenhearted and he didn't like the American League, so yeah, we the Mets took on the Dodgers, half their colors, Dodgers and Giants. So,
that was think that was that was kind of a weird sign for the Mets that so many of their initial fans became fans because they were so bitter at the Dodgers? It's kind of a weird way to Mark Clark. That's who it was.
Glendon Rush in 2001 had a one hitter. Oh, that's not the one you saw?
June 14th, 1997.
Oh.
Mets 5, Red Sox 2.
Oh, okay.
He beat Tim Wakefield. Yeah, he took it into the 7th. And he hit a home run in the game off Wakefield.
Yeah. I want to see one. I don't feel like I'm going to ever see one, but.
Who was your top five that day? Everett, Gilkey, Olerud, Hundley, and Baerga.
Nice.
How about that? Yeah, that's pretty good. So. I mean, do you feel that have this team roped you in, or was that just a fluky first series?
I think both. I think it's really fluky, and I'm falling for it like an idiot. And then, in May when they're 12-36, it's going to be a different story. But
oh, stop!
I want to root. I really want this team to do well. I really do. I mean, there have been some hateable teams in the past. I'm like, whatever. They're not good. How great would it be if they were? But no, I like this team.
Well, what's going on with the ownership?
What's that?
Well, what about the ownership? I mean, just like where does that stand?
I don't know what to say about it anymore. Really, it's sad, and it feels like we're not going to really move forward, and we're going to have to get lucky with, like I said, like a Punch and Judy type underpaid group, but. Even the side deals are falling through. We sold off $200 million, and then that fell through.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's a sad feeling. But then I feel bad for the small market teams. Like they never had a chance. So what am I complaining about?
Oh, I like when you have compassion. Yeah, we did three bets. We did the over for the Tampa Rays,
which I think is great. I think they're close to 95 this year.
By the way, probably the best team in the AL East.
Yeah.
I mean, at least the safest bet because they, they're the deepest. They have seven starters. They have Longoria. Mm-hmm. Then we had We did the over on St. Louis, 84.
Like that, too. What was that, 84 and a half or something? Yeah.
And then we did the under on the Detroit Tigers, who were like 93 and a half. That one's not looking good.
That's a double whammy. I forgot you were watching that.
But we said we'd go 2-1 with those. Now, what's really interesting is in the NBA, we did over on Indiana, 36.
Yeah.
That's 2 wins away from winning.
Yeah.
We did over on Minnesota, 24. Mm-hmm. That won.
Yeah.
And then we have under Golden State, 31 and a half, which is also going to win unless Golden State goes 11-1. So congratulations to us.
Good job. That was all you, I will say, and also all you. We're struggling with these, but I sort of have a good feeling about it. Talk about getting roped in. We have the Clippers to win the division, which we had that at 5-2 to win the Pacific. We got that.
That was our biggest bet.
And the next day, like Kobe got hurt in a preseason game or something, and went down to even. So we have the Clippers at 5-2. I think we're in good shape, but the Lakers have the Spurs 3 more times, if I'm not mistaken, and they're falling apart, and Kobe's not playing much. What do you think of that?
They're tied in the loss column.
Yeah,
I'm not sure how. I guess if they tie at the end of the year, it goes to the Lakers because they have the head-to-head advantage.
Right.
But by all accounts, there's something really wrong with Kobe, and now we have a little bit of an explanation for what happened to him last month because he shot like 37% in March or something.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like he's got a real shin issue. And if I were I would not be surprised if the Lakers, because they said the only way this could help get better is if he just doesn't play.
Right.
So at some point they're going to have to make a decision. Is it worth it to grind it out and try to get this 3 seed? There's really not a ton of upside. They can win in any arena. It's like mm-hmm. they're the one team at all the West teams other than San Antonio that could just go in any arena and win. So at some point, I think they pack it in. Now, what'll be really interesting is if the Clips, we really could see Clippers Lakers round one.
Oh yeah, you're right.
They're right next to each other, and there's a right. It could go 3-6. It could go 4-5. Like it's there's a bunch of different ways that could work. So that could be pretty interesting.
Now you've been to a bunch of their games, and I was at a Clippers Lakers where Clippers were home. If that were to happen, the first round.
Yeah.
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, what kind of home advantage do you give the Clippers if they were to actually have
You know what? It's really bad for the Clippers. And I talked about this with Jacko before he came on. Like at the Wednesday night game, there's probably 40% Laker fans.
And I think that number's gotten higher as the year went on, because I went the first week and it seemed like 65%, 70% Clippers fans.
There was more at this last one. And especially with playoffs, the prices are higher, the StubHub prices are higher, and what happens is all the expensive seats get bought up by Laker fans. So then it just feels close to the court, like there's more Laker fans.
Right.
And it's a disadvantage. It sucks when you have a home game and you have 40% of the stadiums rooting for the other team.
Right.
But
all right, now the other thing we did was LeBron to win MVP. Another great bet, value bet at the time. We got it at 5-2, and then it went down to – like minus 180 almost immediately after we took it.
Yeah.
And it's LeBron, but we hedged a little last week with Kevin Durant as they caught fire a little, OKC. But do you still think it's LeBron's to win?
I think it's going to come down to the last. It's going to come down to the wire. And if it's tight, people are going to vote for Durant. I can't believe LeBron. I mean, he had like, if this was horse racing, he had like the 15, whatever they call it. 15, what do they call it in horse racing?
Furlong?
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how big of a lead he had. And then he kind of blew it in March. Miami came back to the pack. And then Durant, got a lot of buzz. And people like Durant. And unfortunately, with the MVP, it becomes a popularity contest to some degree.
That's the only thing I was worried about. I'm like, these guys, they might just hate LeBron too much, and doesn't matter how many games they win.
Well, he's still, even though he dropped off in March, he's still having one of the best advanced stat seasons of all time. And what'll happen eventually is, because so much of basketball writing now on the internet is pushing these advanced stats, all these people are going to pick apart Durant's candidacy and push LeBron. I'm not sure if that's going to sway the vote, but I do think, you know, if Oklahoma City gets the 1 seed, Miami is the 2 seed, and their seasons are relatively even, You know, the one I feel bad about that I still feel like was a good bet was Carmelo at plus 700 to win the scoring title. Like, you watch what he did yesterday against the Bulls. And, you know, we figured – we made that bet thinking it would be about 28 points a game, which is exactly where we are.
Yeah.
I think Kobe's 28.1 and Durant's 27.9. And – you know, when you look at how this Knicks team was built, it just seemed conceivable Carmelo was going to do better than that. But they had such a weird season.
Yeah, that was a rough one. The one stat I'd like to see, I don't know how they measure this, is how many times is your player the best player on his team? So I feel like Westbrook was the best player in any given game, better than Durant, more than like Wade was over LeBron, don't you? I'm just looking at these stats and everything.
Yeah, I mean,
Westbrook won a lot of games for that team.
That would be the biggest flaw in his candidacy, that he had another top 10 guy on his team who was able to carry the load a lot of time and all that stuff. You know, unfortunately, the NHL series bets aren't out yet. I know you're on the edge of your seat.
You want to go against the Kings, right?
I don't think the Kings can beat the Canucks after attending 20 of their games in person. I can't see it. Especially the only way you could have said maybe it was going to happen was because their goalie would have caught fire. Maybe you could have talked me into that, but he's been terrible lately. And you know, I just don't see it. I don't, especially like game sevens of Vancouver, obviously.
Let me just say, hockey's a weird thing, and you touched on it. The goalies do need to catch fire for a team to do well. And right now, the Penguins are a 4 seed, and they're favored to win the East. So hockey is very strange.
Yeah, the seeds don't matter. I think the thing that stunk for the Kings is they had a chance to be a 3 seed, which would have been a game 7 at home, which would have been fun. But, you know, even if they had been 7, they would have played the Blues. And the Blues have kind of fallen back to earth. It just felt like that would have been a nice team. I saw the Blues in person. I was not that impressed. But to end up with the Canucks kind of stunk. The Penguins thing, they should be the favorite, I think.
I think so? Like
the Rangers too, though. But, man, that Penguins team is loaded. Holy
mackerel. They've lost 4 out of 6 to the Flyers in the series. But that's who they open up with. But, yeah.
It's a great – that's probably my favorite of all the matchups because they had the big fight the other last weekend and – some bad blood, all that. Cousin Sal, I think this is going to be a really exciting next couple months.
You think so? All right.
Oh my God, there's going to be so much sports on. The way this basketball, they're going to be playing 3 NBA games a night during the playoffs.
I am excited for the playoffs. I'm excited for the Mets for the next 5 or 6 days. And yeah, let's get some hockey bets in.
Hold on, one last thing.
Yeah.
Super Bowl odds. Since you are a football guy,
I didn't even look.
Yeah. What do you think Denver's odds are with Manning?
Well, this is the first year I won't be putting a lot of money on San Diego to win the West.
I know. I'm excited to cut that cord finally.
Not have to worry about that. All right. I won't look because I haven't. And Denver Super Bowl odds are 16-1.
Now, according to sportsbook.com, 12-1.
Really?
What do you think your beloved Cowboys are?
I did look at that. Are they 20 or 25, depending on where you look?
They're up to 30 now.
30?
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's demoralizing that, you know, I'm all excited because football was great. They didn't give you 2 days off between Tebow getting traded and Manning stuff and everything. It was awesome. It went from the Super Bowl up until a couple weeks ago. And then they just dropped the hammer on me opening night, first Wednesday night, Cowboys at the Giants. And say what you will about the Cowboys, but they're not the type of team that could go 1-3 and then and rally back to make the playoffs. They need to go 6-1 and then blow it and then go 9-7 at the end of the year, you know?
Right.
So I hate it. I just can't say. I know they're supposed to play them twice a year anyway, but I don't like it. Why do the Giants get home?
I don't get it. The most interesting odds to me.
Yeah.
The Cardinals are 50-1, which just seems high. I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but I didn't feel like that team was that far away, and you never know. You have one good draft or whatever. It just seems high to me. Cincy was 30-1, and to me that seems like, you know, they had the 17th and 21st picks plus all the talent they had last year.
Right.
To me that just seems like a classic you're the Bengals. That's why you can't win the Super Bowl. Like, nobody just wants to bet
on
them.
Okay, those Steelers, Ravens aging a little bit. That's not bad.
Oh, totally. Just from, you know, and then the other one that jumped out, just from a contender standpoint, Houston is 10-1. I thought they were the best AFC team last year. Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
They lost Merritt Williams, but they didn't have him last year. They get Shaw back. They took care of Aaron Foster. They're going to be able to help themselves in the draft a little bit. 10-1 seems, I'm not sure they shouldn't be 8-1. That sounds like the
10-1's pretty good. Now, we talked about that they could have been a one seed with Schaub, and it would have been all different. Yeah.
Because what's interesting is, what do you think the Saints are?
Wow.
We should have done this like Mike and the Duck.
Yeah.
New Orleans Saints.
I'd say 20-1. I don't know. What could they be?
They're 10-1.
What?
Who would bet on the Saints 10-1? I mean, is there any doubt that team doesn't make the Super Bowl this year?
No.
We're not making the Super Bowl if you're the New Orleans Saints. Not happening.
We don't even know who's suspended and for how long, right?
I think they're going to lose Vilma.
Yeah.
And they maybe a couple him. Other people.
I don't know how do they police a GM not being involved in the everyday actions. Did he really just take his cell phone? Like you have to be, he's on Lindsay Lohan alert, like they have to watch him. I don't get it. I don't see how that's going to work.
Checked his texts. The one other one, the Seahawks are 40-1.
40-1.
Oh, just Joe Meade, are you there?
I'm here.
Joe Meade, still alive? This is great.
What do you think your Buffalo Bills are, Joe Meade?
I think they're 10-6 this season.
Wow. What do you think the Super Bowl odds are?
65-1.
50-1.
50
let
to
me
one.
Let me make the case for the Bills really quick.
50-1's high considering the Seahawks and all these other teams are coming in low. Wow.
50-1 is too high. Second best team in that division probably. Best front seven in the league. Turned out Fitzpatrick was hurt last year. They played themselves into a high draft pick. What pick do you have, Joe Meade?
We've got 10.
You got 10?
Yeah.
It's a nice pick.
It's all right.
I don't know. I think the Bills are going to be good. I don't want to play them. They're going to beat the hell out of Brady this year. Their front seven in defense is the best front seven in the league.
Well, if they get the excitement that Joe Meade brings in that stadium, I mean, who the hell could blame them for going to Toronto?
Well, he's speechless. He's so excited. Plus, you have the C.J. Spiller thing. It seems like he might be a real player. Excited. He'll go four rounds too high in every fantasy.
They should win some of their home games.
Yeah. All right, cousin.
All right.
We'll call you back when we have we're going to have we'll do an NBA playoff pot or something like that. And check out Grantland.com. The cousin writes some
I'll be on every other week or so. I'll be writing something.
Every other week or so.
Yeah, and Jimmy Kimmel Live this week, let me just say, tonight, LL Cool J, the ladies love him. James Vanderbeek, I think they love him too. Later in the week, David Spade, Ashley Judd, Danny McBride, and the Shins.
Mm.
Check it out.
How many, over under how many White House correspondent dinner jokes have you written in the last 5 weeks?
10,000, and we just got the list of the attendees.
Yeah.
My friend Tony Romo will be there, scheduled to be there. So it's
this is a serious question.
Extra
are you gonna sedate our agent baby doll James Dixon so that he doesn't do anything inappropriate at this dinner?
I don't know what we're gonna do with him. He's a problem, and he's met Obama before, and he's put it out there that he wants to smoke with him, and I think he's serious about it this time. He's going to embarrass us.
It's the biggest gambling lock that we've had in this entire podcast. I think you should tell him that the date changed and that it's Sunday night. Just tell him, no, they're doing it different this year, baby. It's Sunday night this year.
What, are you kidding me, baby? Stop it. Stop it. I'm not falling for that.
We were upset. He mailed us a picture of his television that he was watching the Masters on, and it looked like something – when Best Buy has those sales and it's like for the TV, you've never heard of the company before. It's like, you know, Stiletto. And you're like, what's Stiletto? What, they make televisions? And then that was his 32-inch TV.
He's like, what do you say? He's like, baby, I know, but the cabinet it comes in is small and I'm sort of a slave to this cabinet. I don't know what to do. I got to watch it. But he puts azaleas all by, and he's a huge Tiger Woods fan, and he puts azaleas all around his television to make it seem like spring and that, like he's at the Masters or something. And I couldn't laugh harder when I heard the ESPN anchor recapping Tiger's first tee into the azaleas. So that's just perfect.
I love, he's the only person I know whose love for Tiger Woods actually appreciated and went upwards during the whole saga. Everyone else was kind of like, I'm not sure I like this guy as much, but I like watching him play golf. Baby was just all in. He's like, ah, come on, baby. Everyone makes mistakes.
I don't even want to get into the 100 reasons why baby shouldn't like Tiger Woods, but it's amazing.
Well, we're going to have him on a podcast at some point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, last thing, you bet. You shorted. Who did you short in the final round yesterday?
Hanson. I try to get you in. I know you don't like laying like a lot of odds, but Oklahoma City had lost a couple in a row. Miami the same. And I said, they're going to win their games just outright. No points. I need something to parlay that with. And Hanson was in first by a stroke, and he was minus 500 to not win it. So I parlayed those three together, Oklahoma City, Miami, and Hanson. And that guy fell off pretty quick. Although he wasn't at, you know, by 2 o'clock Pacific time. But I won that parlay. So finally.
You shorted a golfer.
It's not a bad way to go. It really isn't. To root against somebody just for
poor
one
guy.
Day. And, you know, a lot of these guys, just their history of choking just precludes them from ever winning anything. So
I will say it's one of the most ingenious gambling strategies you've ever come up with, because every tournament, every Masters or U.S. Open, yeah. You can just look at the leaderboard and there's one guy who has the neon sign glaring.
Right.
And you just know he's going to shoot the 75 or higher in round four. And that was
clearly
the guy. Oh,
yeah. And he was so in awe of Mickelson after the third round. I'm like, this guy's not. There's no way. He can't do it.
Well, congratulations. That's a great bet.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon. Okay.
First and only win of the year. All right, buddy.
All right.
Talk to you
soon. See
you. This is Gus.
Hey.
Hey.
You're on the pod.
Awesome.
My buddy Gus, I went to the Mets game. Mets Red Sox no hitter game with him in 1997. Cousin Sal was just on the podcast. We looked it up. June 14th, 1997. Mark Clark hit a home run, had a no hitter going. I was with you and your dad. It all fell apart, as all Mets no hitters do. You happened to be watching the no hitter yesterday with your dad. At what point did you start to feel yourself believing?
At what point did I feel what?
Did you start to feel yourself believing in the moment?
Fourth inning. Hit?
Fourth inning.
Yeah.
Wow.
When they went to the break of the fourth inning, I just I whistled over at my dad, and when he turned and looked, I held up a big zero with my fingers. And
that was it.
And gave him the eyebrow raise. Now look, as Mets fans, usually after three innings, you have to start getting excited.
Yeah.
You know, you and I have had the long running flirting with destiny joke, and which is we've taken to Twitter, and usually I refrain from doing anything about that until we get to the seventh. I think there were 84 occasions last year where a pitcher took a no hitter into the seventh inning.
Yep.
So that's a lot, 84 times. So generally I try to temper it, but with the Mets fans, I think once you get past the third, you start to at least consider it and start hoping. And just the fact that I was watching with my dad and my 9-year-old and three generations of Ramsey men could sit there, and maybe this Easter Sunday, or someone on Twitter called it Neaster Sunday, it might have happened.
And your dad, did he get one with the Dodgers before they left?
Probably.
He must have.
Probably.
He was a Brooklyn Dodger fan, and then they left and he became a Mets fan.
Yeah. I mean, it's been 50 years of Mets baseball, so.
It's really kind of incredible.
7,151 games. 34 one-hitters.
And plus, as Sal pointed out before you came on, then you have the Nolan Ryan 7 no-hitter part. You have the David Cohen part. You have the Doc Gooden part. Like, it's kind of comical at this point.
Yeah, don't forget Mike Scott, Hideo Nomo.
Yeah, Mike Scott. Oh, yeah. Who else? There's been a bunch of them, right? There's been at least, like, 16?
There have been like 6 or 7 guys. Tom Seaver.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yep.
It's happened a lot. Someone asked me today, like, because Terry Collins said he would have taken him out after the seventh inning regardless. And if that were the case, then I would have rooted for a hit in the eighth or ninth. I don't want the first Mets no-hitter to be a combined no-hitter.
Would you rather have a Mets no-hitter, but if it happens, you couldn't win the pennant for another 10 years? Or would you rather have a pennant within the next 10 years and no no-hitter?
I'll take the pennant.
All right. Yeah. What about a pennant? You cannot win a pennant in the next 5 years. Can't. Or a Mets no-hitter in the next 10.
I'll still take the pennant.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still always going to take playoffs over a one-game deal, but
you have a World Series, though. You already won in '86. I mean, you don't have a no-hitter.
But it's been a while. If we'd won something in the last few years, but you know, in '06 we had the heartbreak losing to the Cardinals. In 2000 we had the heartbreak of losing to the Yankees in the World Series. So, you know, the winning still comes first. But you know, that said, when he's in the sixth inning yesterday, I was starting to get a little giddy. In part because I was watching with my dad and the thought that this is finally going to end and my dad and my son and I were all going to be sitting here watching it together. This is going to be awesome. You know, and I refused to tweet anything about it. I got a couple of things on Twitter and I just, other than tweeting you the shh in the third inning.
Yeah.
I refused that. That's the Mets I will never make Flirting with Destiny jokes about. Just because Destiny has been cruel to us.
Then Destiny immediately left and went with Jason Hamill.
Yeah.
Got in his car, and then they couldn't find a parking spot, and then she went home. We have not seen Destiny yet this year.
I will say, to emphasize how desperate I am for a Mets no-hitter, when Tom Glavine was on the Mets, he took one, I think, into the eighth, and I was genuinely excited. And I hate Tom Glavine.
Yeah, you hate him more than anybody.
Well, not more than
anybody. Any Met you've had.
He's high on the list. You know, just because he was a Brave, I never bought into him being a Met. He was up there with that Vince Coleman kind of player of, I hated you when you were on the other team. I'm not going to just start liking you now. Like when he won his 300th game with the Mets, I wasn't like, yay! But when he was throwing that no-hitter, I was generally like, all right, at least it's like a Hall of Fame guy who's going to do it for us. This is awesome. You know, I don't need it to be, you know, some guy who's got called up from AAA for a spot start or... You know, even a Hideo Nomo would have been weird.
But I said this to
Johnny
Sal.
Johnny's our guy, homegrown. You know, it would have been good.
I said this to Sal. When Nomo finally broke my Red Sox no-hitter cherry, it was like, I think it was his first start. And it was just, it was a weird game. It was kind of one of those, is this really going to happen? And then it happened, and it just wasn't how I expected it. I think I even wrote it at the time. It was... like somebody who had been saving their virginity for a long time and then, you know, lost it at 3 in the morning when they were drunk and couldn't even really remember what happened. But then when Derek Lowe pitched one at home, that was kind of that was the no-hitter that I treasure, you know, the most. Anyway.
I mean, for the most part, as a rooting sports fan, I've got to experience all the highs and lows that you get as a fan. There's no other real... football and baseball basketball don't really have an equivalent rooting moment, right?
No. I mean, it's when you see the zeros.
Like, if Kobe's going for 80, you know, that's light, but it doesn't have the same kind of out by out any minute. It could end, some guy makes a great play to save it kind of. That doesn't really exist anywhere else.
Football has, like, the running back getting into 200-yard territory in the third quarter. Can get interesting. And then.
Yeah, but even that is a little obscure because you're like, well, how many yards did he get on that carry? And, you know, no hitter is like, there's five outs left. He hasn't given up a hit. I get that. It's easy to digest. I don't need to figure anything out.
True. Basketball has the, you know, to me, 60 is the mark that really gets interesting. Like if somebody's got 45 after three quarters, something like that, I think it's. Anybody can get to 50 who's a competent scorer, but you start talking 60, it's a whole different animal. But still, not like a no-hitter, not as easy to follow. But it does have the same, like, you get the texts and the tweets when somebody's – like even Ben Gordon a couple weeks ago had, I think, like 40 in the third quarter against Denver, and all of a sudden my BlackBerry started to blow up. And I think that's the equivalent of the no-hitter. When you start getting texts and tweets, you fall on this, all that stuff.
It's funny though, when a guy throws a no-hitter, you'll often put up the graphic of the, there have been X number of no-hitters and X number of cycles, and they're almost identical. But does anybody really care about a cycle?
No, nobody cares.
It's you know, no one's tweeting you to go, oh, Jose Reyes is up. He just needs a triple for the cycle. And as Tim Kirchen says all the time, wouldn't you rather have two homers and two triples than hit for the cycle?
Right. I remember, like, you know, when Pedro was just at his absolute apex, it just seemed impossible that he wasn't going to throw a no-hitter. I always thought that was going to be the guy. You know, and every Pedro start, if he went, got to the even the fourth inning with no hits, you just started to think it was going to happen. And never happened.
Right, and you were legitimately, like, stunned when it didn't happen.
Yeah.
It was, like, oh, there's no one touching him tonight. There's no way.
I remember going to games when it would always be like some sort of dink hit or some line drive down the line that barely made, you know, whatever. And the air would just go out of the park. Everybody was thinking it. Everybody just assumed Pedro was going to do it. And there would be like an energy loss for like 15 minutes after. People would be like kind of secretly devastated. But it just never happened. He threw one with Montreal, right? And that was it.
Yeah, and that was one, like, I technically, I don't know if he doesn't get credit for it because the game went 10 innings, and then he...
Yeah. He pitched
and lost it in the 10th or something.
Yeah.
So, well, Sal and I are in a similar boat in that, like, Seaver's close ones were in 69 when he and I weren't old enough to remember it. And then there was a Doc Gooden one-hitter against the Cubs, but it was like an infield single fairly early in the game. There have been a lot of like 7 innings ones, but I'm trying to remember the last time a Met took one into the ninth. I'm sure it's happened. John Main had a one hitter, but we haven't had that one or two out from the no-no, the best that I can remember off the top of my head in almost all of our lifetime.
Best Mets moment since 1986. Number one, Piazza post 9/11 homer.
Yes, easily.
Number two,
starting this year 3-0. No.
What is number two? Is there a number two?
Number two was just going to the World Series against the Yankees.
The Robin Ventura, the home run
the Grand Slam single.
Yeah, I would say that's number two.
That was a great one. We had the Todd Pratt walk-off homer against the Diamondbacks. There's been a lot of good stuff, but growing up listening to my father and reading about Subway Series, never in a million years thought that one would actually ever happen again.
Yeah.
You know, so for there to actually be a Subway Series, despite the way it turned out, that's pretty high on the list.
Would you put the Seinfeld two-parter with Roger McDowell? Would that be in the top 10? Feels like it
maybe in some people's. I don't know that it makes mine. But,
oh, come on. What was the bigger – you needed that Mets moment. That was during the Bobby Bonilla, Vince Coleman era, I vaguely remember.
Yeah, we had saves. We were throwing firecrackers at people.
Yeah.
Those were halcyon days.
That was one of my favorite Gus quotes ever when you said it's always fun – when we got saves and you – I think you said on the phone to me, it's always fun to have a guy named Saves on your team. And it was. I loved having saves.
Yeah, then you guys got saves and it was fun. Hey, Saves pitching today.
Nice having Saves. All right.
You would take Saves right now.
We would take him as our number three starter right now. You are cautiously optimistic that the Mets will finish blank.
Well, on my blog, my preview I wrote, I had the Mets finishing 74 and 88. That was before the season. I've now upgraded them to 97 wins. I think that's
wow! What a jump!
No, I think... If the starting lineup stays healthy, they could be right around 500 most of the year. The lineup, even with Jason Bay in it, is capable of hitting and producing runs. And the first three pitchers in the rotation are pretty solid, and the next two are big question marks. But they play in probably what's going to be the toughest division in baseball. The American League East looks pretty good now, too. But, you know, Marlins, Nats, Phillies, Braves, pretty good teams, so wins are going to be hard to come by. So if they're around 500 entering September, I'd be thrilled.
Last thing, and then I'll let you go. You're now one of the people running Sports Nation.
Yeah.
On Monday through Friday. What time is it on the East Coast? I always get this screwed up.
It's on 5 to 6 p.m. on ESPN2.
Right. Yeah. How's that been for you?
Surprisingly, Beatles a major pain in the ass. That's
heard
that about
her.
Podcast. Keep it down. See, She's giving me a hard time as I speak.
Yeah, tough.
It's a lot of fun. It's just really different from anything I've done in my 17 years at ESPN. So it's a nice change of pace.
It's a good thing. All right, I'll have to make a cameo at some point. When
do you guys do an LA show? We had your boy Gronk on last week, breaking stuff.
I saw that.
We had Will break with him spiking things.
It was the most congenial Gronk video clip or picture that I've seen online in a while, so I was happy to see it.
Yes. Yes, and he's apparently he's in a dogfight in the Madden cover vote, so you might need to get him on the podcast to boost his profile a little.
I'm trying to work on that. All right. Say hi to the Sports Nation gang for us.
Let's go, Mets.
All right. See ya.
See ya.
Target the
channel. Whoa. Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at PodCenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.